Akudva. We are embarking on Os Dalid, also known as Dallas, because that's how it's really spelled. Right in Orcos Yosher. Parak Dalid, which is called, or is about, the Midah, and as we'll see, Mitzvah and Inyan of Don Lekav Schus. So, Rav Chaim, as Hotel, is going to develop the idea about how critical it is to judge others favorably, and not only because it's a great thing to do and you have a lot of stories and whatnot, but also because we'll see that it's the real recipe for shalom. So just al regel echas, to get ourselves started, one of the biggest issues that we have when we get into quarrels, debates, disputes with others, is that we generally get offended right away. In other words, somebody will say something and we find it offensive, something they said, something they did. And the feeling of being offended is generally because we're not necessarily, again, you know, you never know, but we're not necessarily seeing the big picture, or we're not even seeing the small picture accurately. So I don't know if you can come up with something just off the top of your head, but sometimes someone will do something, whether it's doing something to your room, doing something to you, doing something, whatever. And we right away assume the worst of a person. And therefore we get offended and upset, and we respond perhaps in a way that would be better if we didn't. So the first step is to be down the kav schus and to say, well, maybe they did something else. Maybe they didn't mean to offend me. Maybe I'm making a mistake in my assessment of the situation. So that's why Dan the Kavschus is really the yesod of shalom. And he'll mention this as well. So he says like this, Tanan Perakam de Avos, we learn in the Mishnah, in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, Avi Dan is called Adam the Kavschus, that one should judge all of the person favorably. Like Kavschus, you know what it means literally? A Kavschus? If you imagine a scale, you know, for whatever reason, this is way, the judgment has always been given the image of a scale. You know what I'm talking about? So you have these two bowls on one side, and it's a balance. So we put something in one, and it has to balance equally on the other side. So that's how they used to assess how much something weighed and how much money it was worth. But in any case, so you would probably have the weights on one side, and you would have the amount of flour or gold or silver or whatever it is on the other side. And when they become perfectly balanced, so that's how you know how much is there. So that scale, that balance, is what we mean when we say, have we done is called Adam Lekavschus, that you should give weight to the side of merit as opposed to giving weight to the side of the opposite. So that's what Pirkei Avos says, is that a person should judge Kol Ha'adam, which is a very interesting way to say it. Instead of saying Kol Adam, which would mean every person, it's Kol Ha'adam, which means all of the person. So it makes it sound right away like the assessment is supposed to be taking into account the person as a whole, as opposed to zeroing in on what you were just offended by or are assessing that's in front of you. So for example, Rav Chaim does not say this, so I apologize for interjecting my own idea, but I do think it's very important that when we assess something else or someone else, so I think it's really, really, really important to distinguish between the behavior that we're judging and the person that we're not. In other words, it's heavy dan is called Adam Lekavschus does not mean that I assess the situation in front of me and, you know, listen, it's fine. It's fine. No, it may not be fine. You may see a person and the behavior that they're doing may be totally, totally wrong, totally inappropriate. It doesn't mean that it's okay what they did. Dan Eskol Adam Lekavschus sometimes could mean we're misinterpreting the behavior. It's true. Sometimes we could be misinterpreting the behavior altogether. Sometimes we're not. It's very clear what the behavior is, and the behavior is wrong. The person is not religious. The person is unaware of something. So it could be wrong. So then how do we judge favorably? So we judge favorably by not judging the person. Had I been in their shoes, would I do anything differently? Probably not. Had I been raised the way that they were raised, would I be doing anything differently? Probably not. Have I had their experiences? You know what they say, before you judge somebody, you should walk a mile in their shoes. That way, if you decide you don't like them, you're a mile away and you have their shoes. Anyway, but Yeah, so I think it's really important. There's not a judgment on the person. There's a judgment on the action, on the behavior, and that's legit. You don't have to accept every single thing that happens is okay. Not everything is okay. So I have judged that to be a behavior that I am not going to copy. I'm not going to do that. It's wrong, but I totally do not blame the person at all for behaving the way that they did, because, you know, how am I supposed to know what led them to that? And that's part of Hevidanus Kol Ha'adam Lekapschus, to judge the entire person in their entirety favorably. The person, not the behavior necessarily. Although, like I said, sometimes it could be we're just misinterpreting. It happens a lot as well. Could be what they did as well. Okay, in any case, that's a mission for Yehovah's B'Shvus. We're in Shvus, B'Tzedek Tishpat Amisecha. The interpretation of that pasuk, B'Tzedek Tishpat Amisecha. So let's discuss this for a minute. It's a very famous pasuk. With righteousness, you should judge someone from your nation. So what does that mean, with righteousness, you should judge? How do you judge with righteousness? I mean, the manner in which you judge should be with righteousness, meaning don't violate the din. Is that what it means? You know, judge and judge correctly. Don't be corrupt. So the way that the Gemara interprets it is Avidanis Chavirech Lekavzchus. This exact principle is that the way in which you assess should be with an assumption that the person isn't trying to do anything wrong and perhaps is misled, or maybe we misunderstood something. But that's why the manner in which the judgment comes about should be with a tzedek, not that the judgment itself should be tzedek. Obviously, the judgment has to be tzedek. If you're talking to a judge, of course, you can't corrupt justice. But the point is that in the assessment of what's going on should be b'tzedek. B'tzedek tishpoit amisach. Okay, anyway. Mashma shu mitzas asim ideraisa. So Reb Chaim points out that it's mashma from the Gemara that we're not talking about amidas chasidus like it comes out in Pirkei Avos, that it's just like an extra thing to do. But rather, it sounds like it's really a mitzvah asay daraisa coming from the pasuk with tzedek tishvat amisach. We're in Shabbos. Shishi dvarim adam alecha pereisam b'elam hazeh v'kerim yam zman l'bah. Like we've spoken about before, there are six things that a person not only gets the keren, that the actual reward is prepared in olam habah, but there's even peros that a person eats in this world as well, so that a person benefits in this world from judging others favorably in addition to his schar in olam habah. Ech mehen danas chaver lekavzchus. Bisham, and it also says that danas chaver lekavzchus, danas lekavzchus. This is something he's going to come back to. What he's going to do is he's going to give a whole list of things that all lead to the same conclusion, that by us judging others favorably, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will judge us favorably. And we know in general, mida keneged mida, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us the way that we behave. One of the sources for that is Hashem Tzil Chal Yad Yiminecha, that Hashem is your tzil, Hashem Tzil Chal Yad Yiminecha, that Hashem is your shadow, and therefore the way that you move is the way your shadow moves. And the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to us, Hashem Tzilcha, is Hashem responds to us in kind. The question that we're going to have to ask, and he will come back to this later, is what is this supposed to mean? If we judge others favorably, so who's going to judge us favorably? So if it means other people, which perhaps is what it means here, that's the peros in this world, is others will judge us favorably. Okay, you know, that makes sense. But if we're going to say it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that sounds a little problematic. Because what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us favorably? When we judge others favorably, it's because we don't know. So what gives us the right to judge them with their background and things that we don't know? But a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows everything. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what we were thinking. There can't possibly be a way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can judge us favorably. What is it supposed to mean? So he'll come back to give an explanation of that. But it's true that when we judge others favorably, a Kadosh Baruch Hu will judge us favorably. We just have to explain that a little bit better. What exactly does that mean? Uvi Baruchis, Lav Ika, Shechina Aviracha Kadosh Kabach. If you remember when Chana is davening that she should have a child, and eventually that child, of course, is Shmuel Hanavi. So when she's davening, and Eli HaKohen is there and accuses her of being drunk. Remember this? So what? She her lips are moving, but he can't hear what she's saying. And she's, I guess that wasn't davening with the minions. He didn't know what's going on over there. And so he thinks that she's drunk. So she says to him, "What, you don't have any Shechina Ruach HaKodesh by you? That you're judging me, Lekav Choyva, and not Lekav Schus?" So he doesn't explain this Gemara at all, but it's a fascinating Gemara. Meaning, if the Shechina and Ruach HaKodesh was with you, so then you would have judged me favorably. That's her implication. That because you don't have Shechina Ruach HaKodesh, obviously, because if you did, you would be judging me favorably. So what does that mean? That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, that's one of his midos? Is that what she's trying to say? Or she's trying to say because she always judges others in that way, that's what she deserves back towards her? So again, you know, more research is needed to understand the Gemara, but it's a fascinating Gemara. She's basically saying that there's a proof here, and you don't have Ruach HaKodesh, because if you would be done like Havzchus. Not that you would know the truth. That's not what she's saying. We would expect her to say, listen, if you had Ruach HaKodesh, you would know that I'm not drunk. But that's not what she's saying. She's saying that if you had Ruach HaKodesh with you, you would be done like Havzchus, which is very, very interesting. And it seems to you that he did an Avera at night. You can't have bad thoughts about him during the day. Oh, what a terrible person. Why? Because Vadai Asa Tshuva. Even if you were correct in your assessment, you have to be get down the Kavskos in another way. This is a third form of down the Kavskos. One way is to assess the behavior. Maybe we made a mistake in our assessment of the behavior. Number two, even if the behavior was correct and it's a bad thing the person did, we can't blame them or judge them. And number three is when we see them a little bit later, we have to be got down the kavzchus that they did tshuva. Because if we're talking about a Talmud Chacham or about a Tzaddik, so then of course they did tshuva. Okay, listen, everybody makes mistakes, but we have to assume they did tshuva. That's a third form of dan. It's kol ha'adam le kavzchus. And b'shabbos ha'chesh v'ksheirim loike b'gufoy. Pray that if a person is choshed v'ksheirim, he suspects kosher people of doing something inappropriate, so he ends up suffering physically for that, for the choshed b'ksheirim. Bisham, ma'isa ba'adam, so too, also in the Gemara and Shabbos, there's a ma'isa with a person. So now Ruchaim gets into a whole bunch of stories. So if you're ready for story time, this is agada to story time in the Gemara. He's going to quote us a bunch of famous chazals that all revolve around this issue of have you done this kol adam l'kavzchus. So this happens to be a very interesting one, because according to some of the sources, this is a story actually about Rabbi Akiva. So we don't know exactly what stage of his life it was. He certainly had a wife and children, it would seem, at the time. But the Gemara in Shabbos doesn't give any names. It just says there was a ma'isa with a certain person, Sheyari Migala Elyon, that he came down from the north in Eretz Yisrael. When this guy told Balabayas, and so he, so to speak, rented himself out. He worked for a certain Balabayas in the Darmoim of Eretz Yisrael. And he worked for Shalosh Anim for 3 years. And he knows over here that in the She'iltis, Agir Samaisa Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, Shayim Muskaritza Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanis, Shalosh Anim, and that it was actually Rabbi Akiva who was working for Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanis for 3 years. It would seem that this is the time period that Rabbi Akiva was still in Am Ha'aretz. He was not a Talmud Chacham yet. And he already had a wife and children. So whether that was, I don't know if this is Rachel and he had kids from Rachel, or this is a previous marriage, I have no idea. And Kedemash Ma'ovis Rabbi Nasan, Perik Vav. In any case, Erevim Kippur Amalei. So it was Erevim Kippur, and the worker said to the boss, Tein li schari, give me my wages, ve'elich vazunas ishti uvanai, and I will go home, and I will support my wife and my children. I'm done working, it's time for you to pay. Amar Loi, the boss said, Ein li mos, have no cash. Amar Loi, okay, Tein li peiros, give me produce. Amar Loi, Ein li, have no produce. Tein li karka, so give me land. Ainly, don't have. Tain the behema, give me animals. Ainly, don't have. Tain the karmic sauces, give me pillows and blankets. Ainly, don't have. So wow. So the worker, hifshil kelev lachayrav, it is like the imagery, you know, when a guy runs away from home, you know, there's that little stick with it. So he tossed his kelim, his tools over his shoulder. And he went home depressed. After Sukkis, Nata Balabayas Scharu Biyadai. So the Balabayas, the boss, took the guy's wages in his hand. And along with it, he took a three donkeys that were laden. Echad Shal Michael, one had food, Echad Shal Mishte, one had drinks, Echad Shal Mine Megadim. It went all kinds of delicacies. Okay, he has a parenthetical comment here because there's a problem. This has nothing to do with the issue here. He's just raising it because it's like an obvious question on the story. So before we get back to the story, we're going to pause for a moment to discuss a brief halacha. And that halacha is the halacha of ribis. If you owe somebody money, and when you pay him back, you pay back more than you owe, that's the definition of ribis. So if you go ahead and you owe somebody a dollar, and you say, here's a dollar, I'm going to give it to you because I'm so grateful that you lent me money, or you let me delay in payment, that we're going to go out for pizza together, I'm going to buy you drinks. So Pasha, that's ribis. You're not allowed to do that. So how could it be that this guy is paying back the loan because the worker said, okay, well, you know, keep the money, pay me when you can. He's paying back with more than he borrowed. So he writes, Sarah, you know, ain't bezemishim ribbis. You really have to examine why this is not a violation of ribbis. Well, I'm mashma said bechlal scharet, and it's not mashma that this was part of the wages; it was an addition. Rizark leimar, so you have to say shebalav vachi anaisim lezeh. They would have given this to him anyway. I mean, that's just how they rolled. They used to go, you know, you got together, you were buying food together, something like that. This wasn't anything unusual in their relationship. V'ulai, maybe. Mishum sheish to say sanak lepayel shavat etzlay achashi gemar avodasay. There is a concept, Sefer HaChinuch writes that just like when you free an Eved, you're supposed to free an Eved and give him all kinds of parting gifts. So too, it could be that the same type of thing applies to a worker that, I don't know, maybe in certain situations, I don't know, in every situation. So it's Sarachin on the halacha here, but it could be that perhaps that has to do with when a worker is leaving and parting from you, maybe there's also a similar type of idea. So it wouldn't be considered ribbis. That would be just normal behavior that was expected, or maybe you're mechuyev, or maybe there's a mitzvah. So he gives you, you know, sources to take a look. Say for chinuch tough babies. So, and then the boss. So continuing our story. So the boss took all of these things, these three donkey loads, and he went to the guy's house. After they ate and they drank, he paid him his wages. So the boss said to the worker, when you said to me, I said, I have no cash. But what did you suspect me of? Like, what did you think of me at the time? Amarti, so I said, Shem Prakmati Abazonis Damna Lucha Lakhta Behen. Maybe you found like a great deal, a really cheap product. So you spent all your cash to buy it. And you know, and now you just push over, we're out of cash. You know, this happens, right? This really does happen. That a person has a certain amount of cash in a bank, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's a really cheap deal on something that he could sell for a lot more. And so you invest all your cash in it, and now you're really stuck. You have a cash flow problem. But okay, you know, you'll make it up in the long run. So he says, I figured that's probably what happened. But so when you said to me, tell me, hey, give me animals. I have no animals. What did you think of me? I said, well, listen, I know you have a lot of animals, but it could be you rented them out. You know, people are using them. And what about land? What do you think of me when I said I had no land? I said, listen, it happens a lot that people rent out their land to other people to work. And it could be that's just the way it came out, is that you have no karka now because it's rented out. Other people are working. I know you didn't sell it, but you rented it out that other people should work, and you get a portion of, you know, they call it sharecropping in English. And when you said to me, and when I told you, that I don't have any fruit, what did you think of me? Amarti, I said, maybe you didn't take maestros yet. Well, so the Jain Paris was saying, not allowed to give anybody fruit that doesn't have maestros taken from it. So you just couldn't give it to me yet, and you didn't have time, I'm running. And when I said no pillows, no blankets, what did you think of me with that? I figured at that point, wow, he doesn't have pillows and blankets. It must be that he dedicated, he was maktish, all of his stuff, lashamayim. He must be going through a rough time. Who knows what the story is? And he must have just dedicated all of his possessions to the Beis HaMikdash, and he'll redeem them later. But as of now, they're all hektish. Amar Lai, so the boss said to him, Havoida, wow, I promise you, Kachaya. He died to call himself Israel. Hurkanus bnei Yishalei asam b'tayra. That's exactly correct, because I have a son named Hurkanus. He was Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus, according to that Girsa. So this is his son, named after the father, the grandfather. So Hurkanus, my son, he wasn't involved in Torah. So I dedicated all of my stuff to Shamayim. Either that he shouldn't get hana from them, or maybe because it was part of he wanted to die. I don't know. Whatever the reason was, that's what he did. So when I came to my friends in the south. Maybe the base of Mikdash, the Sanhedrin, I don't know who he went to, but he went to his Talmid Chachamim, Nedarim. He tyrally called Nedarai, and so I did Hataras Nedarim, and so all of my Nedarim are gone now. So all my possessions are back in my hand. And just like you judged me favorably, Hashem should judge you, Lizchus. Tan Rabbanan, another story. There was a Chassid who redeemed a young girl, a Jewish girl, from being from captivity, v'lamaloin, and in the hotel, he had her sleep at his feet. So the next day, when he woke up, he went to the mikvah, and he was teaching his talmidim afterwards. Well, Amar Lahem, he said to them, you know, when I had her sleep, you know, bedafka at my feet and not like somewhere else,
what did you suspect me of? You know, like, was I trying to pull something off in the middle of the night with her? Amarnu, so the Talmidim said, no, it could be. You just don't trust us. So you wanted her to sleep near you. So if something was going on, you'd wake up. But what am I doing going to the mikveh, right? It must be that something happened last night, right? Why else would I be going to the mikveh before I teach you Torah? Apparently he wasn't a chassid. Yeah, because the chassid just go every morning no matter what. And I said, but he wasn't. Okay, so what did you suspect me of? Amarnu, so the Talmidim said, Shemim ibn Eterach ha-derech, Eber keri le-rebi. We figured because there's so much traveling going on and you're not used to the traveling, so you probably had a wet dream. Amar lehem avoida, he said, wow, I promise, I swear, kachaya, that's exactly the emes. Yatem kishem shed antun le-kamschus, just like you judged me to the favorable side. And mok me nice on the kamschus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also judge you also favorably. Tan Rabbanan. There was a ma'aseh shehaya where there was some political incident in Rome, and they needed to send the Talmid Chacham to a certain, what she's referred to as a matronisa, that apparently, I don't know, okay, I can't tell you exactly the situation here. I can only tell you the details. The Gemara is saying is that there was a woman, I don't know if she was, you know, like high up in the political sphere, or if it's just that she had a lot of influence because she was an ancient influencer. Ancient influencer means that all of the big politicians spent time with her at night. So so that was what she was. So either politically she had a lot of clout and she also slept with them all at night, or Islam, she was just an influencer. That they would be able to somehow have influence on them through her. Whatever it is, they needed to send one of the Rabbanon to talk to her. And obviously that type of personality is not appropriate. What would a Rav ever be doing in that situation? Who in the world are we going to send? Rabbi Yeshua said, I'll do it. So Rabbi Yeshua went with his Talmidim, interestingly enough. When they got to her door, he removed, Rabbi Yeshua removed this tefillin at a distance of Arba Amis. What's the distance? What does Arba Amis have to do with anything? So generally, let's say that a person is going to pass by like a church or something like that. So you're supposed to say Arba Amis away from the doorway. So you're not supposed to go within Arba Amis of the door. In any case, at a distance of Arba Amis, so it's a different domain. So he took off his tefillin and I guess he gave it to one of the Talmidim. And he went inside. And the literal translation of the words in the Gemara is, and he locked the door in front of them. He went in and he locked the door behind him. So he writes in parentheses, in brackets over here, when it says here that he locked the door, it doesn't literally mean locked. It means that he closed the door so that it latched, but there was no key. It wasn't bolted. In other words, latch means that the door is not going to open by itself. But if someone would open it, they could open it. They didn't need a key to get in. Shimlei Kain, because if you don't say that, Yei Araya Mikan, this taka would have been a raya she yichud mutter b'mokim pibuch nefesh. That yichud would have been mutter if it's a situation to save lives, because that's assumingly what situation was. Because why is that not yichud? So Teretz is because the door was open, but the door wasn't open. The Gemara says the door was locked. So here's the shaila. So let's say you have a situation where you need to meet with a woman and it's mamash pikuach nefesh, but you have to be alone and you have to lock the door. So for pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to violate it because perhaps it's an abizrayo of gili arayos, because maybe it's close enough related to gili arayos that it should be totally asur shviyargal yavor. So maybe pikuach nefesh is not doicha. That's the question. So maybe, oh, what do you mean? There's a raya. Rabbi Yeshua went in with the matronisa and he locked the door. So he says, none of the poskim ever brought a raya from this Gemara to that. Why is it? He says, because it doesn't mean necessarily, or there's no proof from here anyway, that it means he locked it with a key. It just means it latched so that it didn't swing open on its own. But it's not dafka yichud, because any of the Talmidim theoretically could have come in at any time. For Dana B'Zachronim, the Zachronim already discussed the issue. And no one brings a raya from here. Okay, in any case, back to the story. Achar sheyatza, when Rabbi Yeshua came back out, Yorad v'tovel, he went down and went to the mikvah. Vishana l'talmidim, and he started, learning the shir, doing the talmidim. Amar lehem, I guess that's why they all came with him, but they didn't want to waste any time. The shir starts at 9 o'clock. Whatever happens last night, so not in their game. Shir's at 9. Anyway, Amar lehem, so he said to the mishash shechalasti tefillin, when I took off my tefillin before I went in, but what did you suspect me of? Amarne, we said, because Rabbi on his different kedushin makom tuma. We figure the Rebbe figure, Rebbe holds, you're not allowed to bring a davar kedusha tefillin into a place of tumah. Okay, b'shashan alti. But in other words, maybe I took off my tefillin because I was going to be with him. Nah, we never have him. You know, obviously, you just can't bring them into a place that's tummy. B'shashan alti, and when I closed the door with a latch and I didn't leave it swinging open, machashish. What did you suspect me of? And we said, obviously, there's something that's we shouldn't be listening to. So we have access to the room. It's not yichud, but we can't hear. So it's the bar malchus, which is none of our business. When I went to the mikveh the next morning, what did you suspect me of? Maybe some spit ended up on Rebbe's clothes, and therefore he had to take his clothes to the mikveh. What's that all about? So that's a dinder abanan that Chazal were goyzer. Right? Technically speaking, a non-Jewish woman, which she was, cannot be a nida, cannot be a zava, cannot be any of these things that have to do with menstruation or seeing blood or any of these things. They don't have tumah v'tahara. So what's this din over here that he's going to the mikvah because she's a zava? What is that all about? And Teretz says that's a din d'rabbanan. D'rabbanan, we give a label to all of the non-Jewish women as nida, zava, all those kinds of things. So d'rabbanan, there's tumah. Amar lehem avoda, I promise. Kachaya, that's exactly everything you said was correct. Yatem and you, Kishem Shed Antuni the Zakhus, just like you judge me favorably, Hamakum Yadinas from Zakhus, Akanish Brahma should judge you favorably as well. Well, was Rabbi Nasan, my Sibiriva Achas, a young girl, Shanishba, she was captured. The Holko Achresh Nechasidim, the 30 and 2 Hasidim went to redeem her. Nechasachim the Kuba Shalzoinis, and one of them goes into the house of prostitution. Kisha Yatsa, so when he left this very interesting place, so Amar al-Khaberi said to the other chassid that was with him, what do you think I was doing in there? Amar Shemalei, the Bekama Damim Himu Mehur Henes. I figured you had to go figure out from people that are in the know how much this is going to cost us to redeem or how much money we need. Amar Loi, Avoida, that's right on target. Kacha, yeah, that was true. Amar Loi. He said, "In the Kishem Shatana comes Chos, Kavakarish Baruch Hu denies Chos. Just like you judge me favorably, Hakarish Baruch Hu should judge you favorably." You know, it's so interesting that all of these cases they give this bracha at the end. You know, in other words, it's not pshat that that the Gemara is commenting that and they were judged favorably in Shamayim or something like that. It's that every time that someone judged them favorably, they gave a bracha, just like it. That's very interesting. No, that's interesting. There's another incident where there was a young girl that was captured. And again, two chassidim came to redeem her. One of them was captured. They threw him in jail. So the other one that was not captured, so he went. He collected more money, and now he was able to redeem both of them, the girl as well as the other chassid. So when he got out of jail, Amar Lami said to the people that were going to bring him back home, give me the girl and that she should sleep next to me in her clothes on the bed. The shachar is, Amar Lahem, so in the morning he said to them, send me to the mikvah and send her to the mikvah as well. And so they sent them both to the mikvah. I don't know what the situation of hit biluni and hit biluha is. Meaning, all the other stories, the people went to the mikveh themselves. Here he's telling them to tovel me. What does that mean, tovel me? Why does he need them to be tovel him? Was he like incapacitated? Was he stuck in like a solitary confinement for so long? Like his legs weren't working? Like, I don't know. I don't know the matzav exactly. I don't know the situation exactly, but apparently he's telling them to send them to the mikveh instead of him just going himself. So whatever it is, Amar Latov Lehem. So he said to the people that were dipping them in the mikvah, but Tvila Shali b'machash esdili, when I asked you to be tovel me, what did you suspect me of? Amar Lehem, so they said, as long as you were stuck in jail, you probably weren't eating and drinking much. And now he came out to the wind, the atmosphere of the normal world. Now it affected you, it warmed up your whole body. So probably a night, you had a wet dream. What about when I told you to be tovel her? Why else you be tovel her unless she had had relations with me? So they said to him, that all of those days that she was stuck amongst all of the gayim, she was stuck. She had to eat all this trade food. So you said, you should dip her in the mikvah so she should become purified. which is very interesting, because what does that mean? I mean, if a person eats tray food, there's an Indian to go to the mikvah to purify a person for eating tray food, whoever does such a thing. Okay, but that's what it says over here. What's the source of this again? This goes back to Avos Rabbi Nasan. Avos Rabbi Nasan. Very interesting. Anyway, so he says, of course, to them, Ha'avoida, I promise, I swear, Kacha, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And again, he gives them the bracha, Ba'atem, you, Shedantuna, Kavzachos, you judge me favorably, I'm welcome with an Esma Kavzachos, and so Hashem should judge you favorably. You want to sit down, or are you running? Okay, one second. So that is that story. And then in Tainus, the Gemara in Tainus says, Shalei Abaye Zugei Derabanan, the Mivdekei La'aba Umna. That the Gemara over there has a whole bunch of stories about great tzaddikim, and Abba Umna is one of them. So this is very, very interesting. So Abaye wanted to test Abba Umna to see if he was really this great tzaddik that everybody was saying that he is. So, you know, it's like interesting, right? Like you're going to go like test somebody to see like, okay, but that's what Abaye did. So Isvino, so he sent these Talmid HaChachamim to him to try to figure out if he's really such a chassid. So he gave them a place to sleep and he fed them and he gave them to drink. They stayed by him. These Talmid HaChachamim stayed by Abba Umna. Amach lahem bistarke. So, he gave them these mats. I don't know, the mattresses back then, I guess. He has in brackets, kipo tachteyan, bigdei tzemer lishan aleihem. The Abba Umna gave them to sleep on. He folded up under them these clothing made out of wool to, you know, to sleep on. So it was, I guess, you know, it was some kind of mattress, you know, some kind of mattress or blanket to sleep on, whatever. Litzafra. So in the morning, karchino, they rolled them up. Vishaklino, they took them. They stole them. We come out. I don't know why that's okay, right? You have to be the Gemara. Why is it okay to do such a thing? They're never meant to tell. Okay, whatever it is. But that's the story. The Maisa is that they took them. We come out with Afgalil Shukah. So they got up and they went into the market. Lamachram, he has in brackets, because they were going to sell these things that belonged to Abba Umna. And so they met up with Abba Umna in the marketplace. Amrule. So they said to him, Mishami Mar Hechishavu, what do you think these things are worth? It's like they're selling their own stuff. They're asking the guy who owns them, how much do you think they're worth? We want to sell them. Amaluhu, hachi bachi. He said, you know, whatever. He gave him the amount. Amrulay. So they said to him, but how do you know? Maybe they're worth more than that. Amaluhu, bahachi shaklidu. That's how much I paid. But he's like having this conversation like with them. Like, this is like, you know, it's a normal conversation. Right? We would have been like, you've got nothing. And dink in the back. You know, there's a story in my wife's family. So my daughter, Shifra, is named after my wife's Bobby, who was also Shifra. So Shifra's mother, they were living wherever, it was someplace in Russia. And they had like this fancy tablecloth. I don't know if they only used it for Shabbos. It was on the table all week. I have no idea. And it was a fancy tablecloth and it was on the table. So one day there was this Russian, just got a shiksa, this Russian woman, not Jewish. And she comes in and she stole the tablecloth and she, you know, she marched out and that was that, you know, like now it's hers. So, they were so mad. They were so mad. Anyway, so one day, apparently, my wife's grandmother's mother, great grandmother, so she saw this woman marching through the street with her tablecloth wrapped around her head, you know, like they used to wear these like, you know, wrapped around. So she came up there, she gave her a look, you know, she ripped it off her head and went home. You know, like without any like, see, like fear, you know, like. So, you know, so Abba Umna is like, you know, they steal his stuff, they're going around, they're selling it. He's like, okay, I'll tell you how much I paid for it, you know. Amrule, so they said to him, Didachlin, who it's yours. Vishaklin and we took them from you. Duh, Amrule. So they said to him, Tisminach, you know, please do us a favor. But my chashdani, what did you suspect us of when all this was going on? Amrulehu, so they said to them, Amein Pidyan Shavuya Mikla Rabbanan. Mistama, the reason that you're passing by is because you have to redeem captives, you know, raising money. Because Sefulam Marley, but you were too embarrassed for some reason to ask me for money, so you came up with a plan that I'll pay you back or something like that to get back my stuff, and I'll give you money in that way. Amrulay. So they said to him, Hashan Shplin Humar. Okay, very good. You're right. Now we're giving them back to you. Amrulay. So he said to them, Hushaita Asachtinu Midaito Litzdaka. No, from the time that they vanished that I realized you took them. I was mafkir them for tzedakah. I donated them to tzedakah. In other words, I gave them to you. So he has in brackets here, the Rav Chaim adds, v'yesh la'ayin. So we have to examine this. Okay, so that's the end of the story. So now he wants to get back to this issue that I pointed out to you, which is how could you say that a Kaddish Baruch Hu should judge favorably? What is that supposed to mean? So here he addresses it. How could you ever say a Kaddish Baruch Hu should judge favorably? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the truth, so he can't judge favorably. So you can say the bechol davar is very interesting. In everything that a person does, there's always certain parts to it that like were justified. There's something about it that was like, you know, maybe made a mistake or maybe there's a reason why he thought it would be beneficial or whatever the reasons that, you know, k'moshe kasev v'shabbos, the filatation v'yastishim v'tisha v'oysa malach malam edal v'chayva v'echad v'chus nitzol. He's pointing out that you have a strange Gemara, because the Gemara says even if you would have 999 malachim that are testifying about this person that he's guilty and he did something terrible or whatever, and there's only one malach that's malamed alav l'chayva. Sorry, all of those are l'chayva, and there's only ve'echad l'schus. There's only one of these malachim that is testifying favorably about him. Nitzol, he'll be saved. So Rav Chaim is asking the kasha, how could that be? What is it supposed to mean? So it means to say that 99.9% of what he did was negative, but there's 1% there of positivity, of something that was, you know, good or something like that. So you see already that by the malachim that such a thing is possible. So mamela, that means to say there's positive elements or favorable elements in everything that a person does. And therefore, how much do you stress the positive versus how much do you weigh down the negative? How much weight does a positive get and how much weight does a negative get? And that could theoretically, you know, balance things out or change the judgment against the person, depending on how much you stress the positive versus the negative. That seems to be what he's saying. V'ayin b'shmir salash n'chilik alav shara ha'tvuna, perek da'ad she'kasuf ke'ein zeh, v'chavetz chayim in shmir salash, and it writes something similar to this. Okay. V'im hayu kula nitarim le'dun le'kav z'chus. And if everybody would try harder to judge favorably, so there would be a lot of machlokes, a lot of disputes and fights would just not happen. Like Rashi points out in the Gemara in Shabbos, in order to bring peace, because by the virtue of the person that's judging favorably, the person is not doing it to me. He's not doing whatever it is to me. Anusu, it's beyond his control, right? Sometimes you have a person that's just like psychologically, like just not, they're not well, you know, they could really use therapy. Okay, you know, they're not under control. They're just not under control. The person gets angry, you know, and he's not angry at you, but he got angry at work, you know, and then he comes home and takes it out on you. So, okay, he's again, he's out of control. It's not his fault. You know, he didn't mean it. Or alternatively, maybe the person was just misled and they really thought that what they're doing was positive. They certainly didn't mean to do anything negative. They mamash thought that this would be a positive thing. Okay, so if that's the way that you look a person, that instead of getting offended, yesh shalom b'nayin, then you don't get offended, you don't respond in kind, and then there's shalom. Ashrei mi shenizar bazeh tamid. Ashrei is wealthy, rich as a person that is always careful about this particular issue. So now he has a few stories. He says, Rav Chaim spoke about a certain unnamed person who had told lies in his name and against whom he had a great grievance. Later, he said, I asked myself, what benefit will I get from not forgiving him? So I also judged in the Kabschus that he didn't lie deliberately. Yeah, whatever. He's by nature an angry fellow. And so he didn't pay attention to verify the things that he heard, because he's, you know, he's impetuous. You know, he thinks he does acts too quickly. A person who is feeling angry is convinced that justice is on his side, and he's not going to be careful about listening carefully to what others are telling him. In that case, as we have seen in the Gemara, a person may be certain that he heard something and even be prepared to swear by it, and he's totally wrong. Immediately he added, I forgive him completely. Avoiding controversy, Rav Shneiman told someone close to him the following story. It once happened that a Jewish man, he hit his wife. He hurt her physically. She came out to pour, she poured out to a certain Rav. And the Rav, when he heard this, and the guy had physically hurt his wife, ooh, wow, he lashed out against the husband, you know, he really gave it to him. In truth, that Rav took her side and responded emotionally rather than rationally, because she had cried so bitterly in his home. Although what that husband did was certainly very, very bad, in the bigger picture, their home life was problematic, and she actually was the source of the problem. It was certainly necessary to deal with him, but not the way that the Rav did. When they told the story to Rav Chaim, so he added that had the husband judged his wife, Lekav Zchus, he would have calmed down. In other words, that's the way it always goes, that when we get offended, we respond in an emotional way, but we shouldn't get offended because we should stop it in its tracks by judging favorably. Segulas Rishon Ba'ayis, Rav Chaim said, they had once seen in a sefer, he didn't recall a title, from about a century ago, a description of the blessing inherent in each word of Birchas Kohanim. So for example, when the Kohanim give the bracha of Yichu Neka, which has to do with chayin, favor, refers to being graced with sons and daughters. We ask him lecha shalom, that when the Kohanim say that you should have shalom, refers to shalom bias. So the author of that sefer writes that one can ask the Kohen to think about him and the salvation he needs during Birchas Kohanim, and this often proves effective. People come to me every day with shalom bias problems, Rechaim said. I thought that perhaps they could make use of this idea. They should ask the Kohen to keep them in mind for shalom bias. Anyway, they have in the parentheses here that it turns out it's a kuntres. It's a little book called Chesed La'alafim by Rav Elio Pinchas HaKohen Mireina. And on the beginning, the front of this sefer, it says, in this sefer will be explained from the teachings of Chazal, the segula of Birchas Kohanim, to achieve success, wealth, honor, and a good long life, to nullify all evil and anger and affliction from people through the intentions of the Kohanim as they recite the brachas. This was the practice of the Shlach Kaddish, who was a Levi. During the Dukhan, he would direct his thoughts to draw blessing upon all of his family that were living abroad. Anyway, that was the sefer. A man came to the home of Rav Chaim and requested a bracha for Shalom Bayis after a very difficult quarrel in his home. Rav Chaim advised him to learn the Perek HaShalom, saying that it had a special segula to introduce peace into the home. Rav Chaim added that the man, that Shas contains actually two prakim that have the word Shalom in it. There's HaIsha Shalom in Yavamis and HaShalom, which is what he was referring to, which is the end of Maseches Derech Eretz Zuta. To love peace. One Shabbos was declared a time for strengthening kashrus in the community, so they instructed all their rabbanim to give drashas on the Shabbos about kashrus. A certain Talmud Chacham gave a drasha in the Liederman Shul on Friday night, which is where Rav Chaim davened, officially was the Rav. When he was done, Rav Chaim told him, Yishra Koyach. So jokingly, the speaker said, what are you giving Yishra Koyach for? I'm done already. So Rav Chaim said, no, I'm giving Yishra Koyach for speaking only positively about strengthening kashrus observance and not speaking about the less reliable kashrus organizations. The next day in Shabbos morning, someone came to Rav Chaim and told him he was about to speak in a shul about the same topic, kashrus. He had come to ask whether it was true that Rav Chaim had been critical of a certain kashrus certification. And if so, should the speaker quote him? Rav Chaim said, first of all, it's not true. Second of all, why is it even necessary for you to speak about that kashrus certification? The important thing is to speak only words of chizuk about our kashrus. You don't need to talk at all about any other one. A man who had authored a sefer came to see Rav Chaim with a letter filled with curses that he had received regarding his book. You, he didn't see how he could possibly judge the letter writer favorably and just let the matter go. I also have that kind of letter that I received after publishing one of my svarim, Rav Chaim told him. At that time, I didn't respond to the letter writer. Today, he's a friend of mine. Okay. A critical nature. Rav Chaim heard that Rav Steinman was once visited by a fellow who spoke critically of other people, excusing himself with the claim, but whatever, you know, I'm a critical person. It's the way I am. After he left, Rav Steinman said, I thought to myself, in that case, you should criticize yourself. Instead of looking for faults in others, if that's your midah, you know, do it to yourself. It's human nature to look for faults in other people, but a person has to behave the way we're told in Chovos HaLevavos. One of the Hasidim, it is told, passed by the carcass of a dog, and it gave forth a dreadful odor. His disciples said to him, ugh, the carcass stinks. He said to them, ooh, how white are its teeth. They then regretted the disparaging remark they had made about it. In other words, he was trying to teach the Chovos HaLevavos, right? He was trying to teach him a couple of things. Number one, why do you need to say anything at all? You don't need to say anything. It stinks disgusting. You don't have to say, oh, it stinks disgusting. Keep it to yourself. And if you're going to say something, at least what you say should be positive. Wow, look at us. Nice white teeth. Now, if it's blameworthy to speak ill of a dead dog, How much more so is it blameworthy to speak ill of a living human being? And if it's proper to praise a dog's carcass for the whiteness of its teeth, it's certainly a duty then to praise an intelligent and insightful human being. One should always seek out another's good qualities, for there is no person that is perfect. Therefore, seek out only the positive attributes of everything and let a person seek out the faults within himself. Reb Chaim has said that for a person to be critical is not an asset, as he ends up speaking Lashon Hara. Right? There's a lot of, you know, it's a challenge, you know, because on the one hand, when we're learning, so that's a very important part of learning. Thinking critically is a very, very important part of learning. But to insist on such a midah when it comes to people is not a good thing. We're not supposed to have a critical analysis of people. We're supposed to be able to don the kav zchus and look for the positives. And when it comes to learning Torah, so that we can be as critical as we want, so we come to the emes. A man came to see Reb Chaim in distress. I am at a loss. I don't understand what my wife wants from me, and I don't think I'm satisfying her wishes. We're not quarreling, but what can I do in order to understand her better, to judge her favorably, and to strengthen our relationship? You want to take a guess what Reb Chaim said? Go on vacations together, or go visit them. Reb Chaim responded, learn a Musar Sefer with her. For example, Orchos Sadikim. There are many other good Sfarim. Whatever, pick one. Learn together, and Be'ezus Hashem, it will be all right. As the man was poised to leave, Reb Chaim added, don't teach her, learn with her. Oh, get out of here. All right. And so concludes another edition of Orchos Yosher. I think it's awesome. I think it's really awesome. You know, it collects all of these things, and then you have a chance to just like think a little bit about each one. Each one is obviously Chazal. They're so incredibly insightful and interesting. All right. Have a beautiful week.